This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Photographer Sheila Pree Bright was quiet and kind of a timid kid. In fact, it wasn't until college that she finally found a means for self-expression, and that would be the camera. Her gift for making beautiful images grew quickly into a passion for using photography to spark thoughtful and unexpected conversations about race, politics, and justice. Sheila first came to the national spotlight with a series called Suburbia, which explored the lives of African Americans living in suburban communities in the South. Since that project, she's continued to investigate black spaces left out of mainstream conversation. Photographs from three of her recent projects are on view at a special pop-up exhibit in Durham, part of the Click Triangle Photography Festival. They document past and present movements for social justice, and they connect uncelebrated heroes from the 1960s to the work of Black Lives Matter activists working on the front lines today. Sheila Pree Bright is in town for the opening of the exhibit and joins me now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Take us back to the beginning, finding the camera. This is important for you.
Yes. My last year in college, I took a photography course. I'm a very shy, very introverted person, believe it or not. People don't believe that, but I am. And that the camera allowed me to speak. It was like my weapon to be able to see, because I'm a daughter of a soldier, and we traveled a lot around the world. And I was always curious about people.
Your father, a Vietnam War veteran.
Yeah,
right?
He's a Vietnam War vet.
What was it that you were wanting to say that you hadn't said until you found that camera?
Well, as a child, like I said, I wouldn't speak. I would always stay in the room and read books. It wasn't that I was trying to find something, but the camera is just my voice.
And you did an exhibit that brought you quickly to public attention. Tell us about your first show in Houston.
My first show in Houston, I graduated. I didn't go back to school for photography, self-taught. And I started photographing the hip-hop culture, which is gangster rap. I'm part of old school. And there was an artist that saw my work, and he said, "You need to be in the show." And I'm like, "I need to be in the show?" He said, "Yes." Yeah. So he brought a curator over, and the curator saw my work, and he was totally shocked. He thought it was going to be like little fashion images, but it was images of rappers in the gun culture. And I remember, you know, being so naive when you're 20s, I would go over to the houses of the guys, and they came out with these AKA guns, and I asked them, were they real? And they said, "Where did you come from? You're like a white girl in a black body." So that actually started my art career. My first show was in Houston. I didn't know anything about art. I got shoeboxes, and I painted them all black from the outside, inside, and placed these images in the box for the viewer to really look at them. Didn't go to the show. The curator called me and says, "You got to get down here." And I said, "No." I said, "A photograph speaks on its own. I don't have to come down." He said, "Please come down." So when I came down to the show, people were all in my face, and that was very frightening to me. And one question that they asked me, there was an image where I took of a rapper where there was only, back then, film, one exposure left, and I told him to point the gun at me. And he said, "You want me to point this gun at you?" And I'm like, "Point the gun at me." And so he pointed at me, and I took the image, blurred him out, and you see the barrel of the gun. And they were so amazed with me with the imagery that I had.
They also asked you if it was loaded, right?
Yeah, they asked me, was it loaded? I said, I wasn't thinking about that. I just told them to point the gun at me.
So what were you thinking about it with photography? If it came as a surprise and a shock to you that someone would say, "I'd like to make a show of your work," what was it you were planning to do with all this great work?
You know, back then, being young, you don't know. You're kind of like, you just kind of move, and I'm self-taught, and I took photographs, and I always said when I left school, I said, "I want to photograph the hip-hop culture and the rappers," and it came to, and I started that, yes.
When did these aesthetic and creative notions start to come to you? In other words, the idea of taking that shot of a gun pointed directly at you, blurring the image of the shooter and showing us the gun. I mean, that's an artistic decision. Were those the kinds of images you had in mind, the intention you had when you wanted to photograph hip-hop culture?
No, I just wanted to photograph hip-hop culture. I believe that I don't think about that. I just, whatever moves me and what I see, that's what I photograph.
Your first breakout project, and one that got you a lot of attention, was Suburbia. Tell us about that.
In 2005, or I believe it was 2006, I won right after I received my MFA at Georgia State University in 2003. I won a national award for the Santa Fe Prize, which is now called Center. And I went into African-American homes in Atlanta because that is a large population, because I didn't want to point my camera to urban America. Projected images in the media is always about urban America, and it's very stereotypical.
Right.
And so I photographed Suburbia. I called it Suburbia. When I went to pick up the award and had to do a presentation, it was from curators, photo editors, gallery owners. They all said was one thing that they said to me, that this work didn't have enough signifiers in it to show that these were African-American homes. That kind of blew me away. One publisher says, I grew up around Martin Luther King and you don't have enough signifiers. And I laughed and I said, what do you want to see? I said, fried chicken, collard greens, and watermelon. And he didn't say anything. But me as an artist, I don't know why that was a shock to me. We live in the 21st century, and I see how an image, a negative image or a stereotype, is in one's mind unconsciously so, and don't realize that how that just stays in one's consciousness. Because there's a African-American culture is very diverse. It's not just urban America.
Well, finding a place to normalize the picture, I think, is some of what, whether you intended this or not, would be the effect of that, is to say, no, there is a place and should always have been a place for African-Americans in this.
And that
culture was
the whole point of the work. And I was told that, well, I've never heard of your Suburbia. I didn't call it Black Suburbia or African-American Suburbia.
But it's a big change for you, because you started out attracted to precisely the images and the culture that had been stereotyped, those urban hip-hop images.
Right.
Was there sort of a moment of revelation? Did you wake up one morning and sort of snap and go in the other direction? Or was
no,
it a slow
with
evolution?
All my series of work, it's just what moves me. Hmm. I look at what's going on in popular culture and in the art world. And then the one reason why I did Suburbia is because I never saw African-American images in Suburbia. Because at that time, a lot of artists were talking about Suburbia, but I didn't see African-Americans.
I see. Yeah. Now you've been working on three projects, in fact, over the past decade, that explore activism and social movements. Tell us about Young Americans.
Young Americans started at the time when President Obama, which he was not president at the time, started running for the office. And I wanted to know what Generation Y felt about America. What does it mean to be an American in the 21st century? So because what happened with that is this. When it comes to Generation Y, what do people say about Generation Y? They're only concerned about body image, technology. They're not concerned with politics. And I felt beg the difference from that. So I decided to give them a flag, tell them to do whatever they want with a flag. I traveled around the country and said, let's talk about America. And that was amazing. I received a major grant from the Aetna Foundation through the Wadsworth Museum. And that was my first solo show at the High Museum in Atlanta in 2008.
You tell one story about a woman in particular named Tara.
Yeah, Tara.
Yeah.
My artist residency was in Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut. And keep in mind, I don't know these individuals. This is like the first time. Mm-hmm. Tara came into my studio in Hartford. And she had this puzzled look on her face. It was kind of sad. And I asked her what was going on. Her parents dropped her off. And she had told her parents what she wanted to do. And she told her parents that she wanted to take the flag and tie herself up in like a noose. And so she felt bad that her parents told her that, but she did a much more powerful image to me. She took the flag and put it around her mouth and covered it. And it was like politicians are constantly keeping us silent. Our generation, they're not hearing our voices. And I thought that was much more powerful with that, because that resonates now today in what we're going through with politics now.
Well, also just the story. I mean, if it can stand for anything larger, if the prejudice is that Generation Y, younger millennials, aren't interested in politics, it may just have to do with their perception of politics. If
that's
you have
true.
A generation that says, that's too I don't want to see that symbol, and they're saying, well, this is precisely the symbol we need, it may be just a matter of, you know, how we communicate and how we see the imagery.
Well, with the young generation, they're all about truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're living in a critical state in our country right now. And the young people, I was at the DNC photographing that. I received a commission from Creative Time up in New York. And it was really amazing, because a lot of young people in droves came from California, everywhere, because they wanted to overthrow the nomination. They wanted Bernie. They really believed in Bernie Sanders, because they felt that he could really transform the system. They are tired of the system.
So they are engaged.
They are. They're very engaged.
There's no
engaged.
Machinery. There's
yeah.
no mechanism. You look around
right.
and you say, well, this is built for somebody else.
Right.
Not built for us. And so if you don't hear us, it's because you haven't made the mic that, right. that fits our voice. Tell us about this intergenerational project then that you've done that kind of brings two generations together.
Well, it started in 2013. I came up with the concept of 1960 Now, because me as an artist, my work has always been in galleries and museums, and I wanted to get my work out more to the masses of the people. And I took Young Americans out in 2012 to Miami Basel in 2012. From there, I started thinking about young people, because young people are the ones that are going to make the change. You know, older people talk about they want change, but we're a little bit too uncomfortable. So I reached back to the young people that changed the face of the nation in the 60s, the civil rights movement. And I found the unknown civil rights members. I found Mr. Lonnie King, who started the Atlanta Student Movement in Atlanta. I found freedom riders. I photographed portraits of them in my studio. And then 2013, I wheat pasted them on walls in Atlanta. They were like 12 feet high. So what happened in 2013 was George Zimmerman. He got acquitted for the shooting of Trayvon Martin. I decided as an artist that I need to get on the ground to find out what was going on and photograph these young visionaries. I took portraits of them, too, and also I'm on the ground taking protest images. So my first show was at the Museum of Contemporary Art in September of last year, where I wheat-paced the elders and the young people in the show, along with the protest images and a video.
Do you see a connection? Is there a genealogy here, or do you see it as a kind of broken movement?
There is a connection. And what it is that back then, the young people were sick and tired of being sick and tired. The young people on the ground are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They feel that they're falling in the same footsteps as their parents and their grandparents, and they're tired of it all.
How does it manifest itself? I know that you like to generate conversations, I will assume, but let me ask you first if this is the reason you like to take your work outside of the gallery and show it around in other venues, to generate conversations, public conversations?
Yeah, to create a dialogue. And it's for the masses of the people. It's just not, you know, and in art and galleries, it's just a particular audience
right.
that's viewed. But to take it out to the streets, I find that really... I like that, to take it out to the streets. And so I move in different spaces, in galleries, museums, and I'm also on social media, too, with my work.
So I'm sure there have been many conversations and interesting comments that you've heard about your work. I wonder what you see in your work as you put together workers from the 60s civil rights movement with Black Lives Matter activists now. You see a commonality. Everybody, we remain sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you see in terms of the change? How has it changed, and do you have hope that it would be effective, this way of being political without declaring for a party or
when
a
candidate? When you say change, are you talking about from the difference of the 60s versus now?
The activism now, how it approaches the problem and what change it expects.
Well, the approach is different from, in a similar, is different because of technology. Right. What they could do in the 60s would take them 5 years to do. It only take them 20 seconds because we have social media. The smartphones is like the new media. A lot of people do, well, I'm not saying a lot of people, but a lot of the young people do not engage with Fox or CNN or any of that. They have their smartphones, and that's where they get their news from there. And with the young people being on the ground, it's all about disruption. It's about shutting down the highways. It's about going into city council. It's to make everybody continue to be uncomfortable. 2015 was a year of disruption. 2016 is black bodies still being endangered. And what is going to be done about that?
I want to thank you very much for being on our program, Sheila Pree Bright. Her photographs from three of Sheila's projects are on view at a pop-up exhibit at 1116 Broad Street in downtown Durham. She's going to be at the gallery tonight at the opening at 7 o'clock. Photographs on view through Friday, October 28th, part of the Click Triangle Photography Festival. Sheila, what a pleasure. Thank you for talking
with us.
Thank you. You can find out all the information about that exhibit and much, much more at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Ormond, Katie Barron, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley's our technical director, Brett Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.